Who's forgotten furry lint? For the next 3 hours, a presentation and reprise of the last 4 years, August 84 to August 88. Who's forgotten furry lint is the approach we're taking, not as a metaphor, but as the main theatrical ground. Cliche to archetype. The following may appear to be cliche, but archetypal intensity is intended. The future is the past. This is a production of Hand Signals for the Blind. Who's forgotten furry lint?
To get a cake in the oven for you. I heard the gentle tap. Oh, not the rap, but the gentle tap that opens up to Sesame, Scheherazade forever.
Oh, Garrett.
The Kismet, the Scheherazade.
It's wonderful.
What?
You look great.
I don't think so. You look great. You always look so great. Greater than great. Oh, I don't know. Mommy says, no, he gave me a field, not field day yet. Tomorrow's field day. That's when the field start, a field day. Mommy, don't make me drunk. You made me drunk ever since you've been here. Now, take me to the kitchen or I'm going to wobble.
Oh, we better watch.
I'm wobbling.
Wobble.
My God, I thought I'd get the cake in the oven in time. Oh, Lord.
No, we don't want
to have. Oh, yes, I want a special cake for you.
Oh, no.
Come in, darling. My God. Oh, I should have been ahead anyway.
Yeah, were you going to leave the front door open? Or?
No, it's for you. No,
Robert.
We
just tap, eh?
I left it open.
The first one.
Huh?
You weren't meant to open the second one.
No, I thought I was going to open it at 4 to 9.
Oh, of course not.
Dear Carolyn. Greetings to thee, dear, forever and forever. Continue the greetings. So every Christmas, and into other Christmases, and the past Christmases, the ones to be. And the ones that would be.
Too many Christmases.
Too many is right, little girl. Oh, my God, look at her. I had such a message from Darryl about you. He said you cured him. You cured Christopher. He said she could slay dragons.
Oh, no. They were great. I really liked them.
Were they really? Did you get wonderful vibes from your parents?
Yeah. I'm glad.
They're nice boys, aren't they? They're really nice fellows, real nice.
There are two young boys from Nova Scotia that Garrett gave my name in case anything...
The guys are called.
Oh, my God, were they happy.
And then, of course, everything went amiss. My gosh, what he went through.
Wee, wee, wee. Always French, always say yes to the girls and the boys. Wee, wee, wee. Doesn't matter where I am. No, but something, they got him on the operating table, I heard.
Know,
they got
I
know. The knife in him.
Yeah, right.
I said, don't you put him. My God.
I didn't hear. Is it got worse? I think he had to go have surgery.
Well, before I saw them, this was all on the phone. I didn't see them. He was in the hospital already, and they had him.
But devils, and here's the angel. Did he realize then? Where was, you know, his friend is a Sagittarian. That's Daryl.
No, up we go.
And Daryl is very talented boy, and also very psychic, and a beautiful, quiet manner.
Oh, yeah.
He's a lovely manner, hasn't he, Daryl?
Yeah. Well, they're both. I mean,
they
Daryl is more serious and, you know, more quiet.
I mean, Daryl is more quiet and, yes, he's the philosopher.
Yeah, yeah. But I like them both.
My, they spoke of you so beautifully.
Did they come to the house?
Then they, after all that, they get so frightened by what happened. They wanted to, you know, have a doctor. So they
cover me this way unless it's Linda.
Well, it has to get
or
the
Sharon. Linda or Sharon. I don't want to talk. If it's somebody wants to see me, I'm not here at the moment. But take it as you're taking messages for me. Will you take it, Bobby?
You're going ahead. I did last time.
All right, don't do it at all. And they're
see,
stopped.
They got them. They heard it.
No, they call
back. We're there together, they call. Hallelujah. Oh, sister, that's the way I want everything to be. I've been calling for a long time. I just want to say that way. Everything up here, I wouldn't come true. I don't care how many men in my life. Then I can take them all. Every one of them. You know, yeah, very quick. Oh, and they go away. They never look at me again.
Garrett's looking at himself as he talks.
I'm not. I can't even see myself anymore. You're here. I see you and you.
I apologize for wearing my glasses, Garrett, but I didn't
have
time.
I didn't know you had them on.
I didn't know.
I'm trying to get it whipped. Next week, fixed. You're stupid, what else can you be?
I got a card from Shannon over at Sue's, a card from Shannon.
Shannon, oh.
To you.
Oh, that's the Goya Gypsy.
Mm-hmm.
What a character. Oh.
Oh, boy. Talk about your love affairs. My God. She's going to upset everybody that ever comes in her life, I think. What an individual. Oh, dear, darling. Magical one. Is she something? She's one of the most outgoing people I think I've ever met. With her absolute spontaneity and her extempore.
Yeah.
The girl is just marvelous. She's so beyond convention society. There is no society to be beyond, of course. There never was. They just imagine their society, these people in society. That's all they do. They think they preen themselves in being what they're not. Mirrors in their fronts and the backs, but always in the wrong place for themselves. They should put it somewhere else. On themselves.
Can I do a drum solo now?
Right for the bell and Garrett's guitar solo.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift dream. My dream.
I can't help it if I try. I remember that you said goodbye. Too bad all these things can only happen in my dreams. All these things can live for me.
Hi, Sherman Skolnick, Citizens Committee to Clean Up the Courts, 9800 Oglesby. A forbidden subject, the history of airplane sabotage. Major advertisers, the airlines, go bananas on the mere mention of it. A few examples. Adolf Hitler used airplane sabotage to get rid of a few of his critics. Just another form of political assassination. In 1961, the head of the United Nations, Dag Hammarskjöld, was in Africa investigating the political murder of a popular liberation leader, Patrice Lumumba. Hammarskjöld was threatening to bring the whole matter before the UN. The new Kennedy White House was implicated. The Kennedys reportedly had joint business interests with the Belgian copper mines in the Congo. They had a motive to have the CIA murder Lumumba. The cover-up included Kennedy family retainer Allard Lowenstein, a CIA expert on Africa, himself murdered as campaign strategist when Teddy ran for president in 80. Hammarskjöld's plane crash. Sabotage was hushed up. 1965, a disgruntled top CIA official was on the way to Chicago on United Airlines Flight 389. He was grumbling about the spy agency's complicity in the murder of President Kennedy. On the way to O'Hare Airport, the plane blew up and fell into Lake Michigan. Some editions of the newspapers mentioned a bomb, later whitewashed. Most of the airplane and most all the bodies were recovered from the lake. Missing was his body and the flight recorder. Rescue divers said they were baffled. 1 month before Nixon's reelection in 1972, a persistent critic, Congressman Hale Boggs, kept mouthing off about his misgivings as a member of the Warren Commission. He was not sure that there was a lone assassin of JFK. And maybe Richard Nixon, in Dallas that bloody day, was part of the plot. Boggs disappeared on a plane flight to Alaska, thanks to a cover-up by the U.S. military, never found either him or the plane. Then, a month after the re-election, Dorothy Hunt, wife of the Water Gator, on the way to Chicago with $2 million blackmailed out of the Nixon White House. E. Howard Hunt and his wife reportedly had documents showing Nixon's complicity in the plot to assassinate President Kennedy. Mrs. Hunt and 11 other Water Gators perished in a sabotage crash near Chicago's Midway Airport, United Airlines Flight 553. 150 FBI agents, mysteriously, were waiting near the airport. We touched off an international storm when the U.S. government's entire file of suppressed documents and pictures showing foul play fell into our possession. Despite the documented proof, United Airlines started a press campaign to call me a liar. If I were allowed to be heard, well, they could have lost their certificate to be an airline. They are owned by the Rockefeller Banks, which wrecked the publication of my book on the history of air sabotage. The U.S. attorney in Chicago, Jim Thompson, 1973, was instrumental in stopping a lawsuit I brought about the dirty business. Big Jim later went into private law practice. His client? United Airlines. 1986, the president of Mozambique is murdered by having the air-to-ground communications purposely misdirected, like they did to Flight 553 in Chicago. His plane crashed into a mountain. arranged by the U.S. CIA and the South African secret police. Now the president of Pakistan is murdered by airplane sabotage. The CIA has convinced the news fakers, however, that the U.S. spy agency is not involved. So, in a rare burst of candor, the mass media says they think it was sabotage. Oh, yeah? The super-rich rule us by court bribery, by stealing land titles, and by snuffing out opponents through so-called accidents.
When your baby don't love you, kind of a drag. When you know she's been untrue. Oh, listen to me when I'm speaking, 'cause you know my heart's got a kid and I know that you've been cheating.
On a freeway one day in the fast lane, and I saw a sign that said, "This way out." And so I took it. And I drove down this road until I went through a great archway that said nothing on it until I got through. And I looked back, and it said, "Entrance Insane Asylum." And I didn't want to go back in there. So I drove down the road, and it ended. And it ended in a parking lot that was filled with vehicles with no one in them. And I got out of my vehicle and looked around, and finding no one, I saw this path that went up the hill. After waiting around and not finding anyone for quite a while, I decided to take the path, and I saw two figures at the top of the hill. But when I called to them, they didn't see me, and they went over the hill. I followed the path to the top of the hill and looked down into the valley and saw these two figures entering a lodge-like structure. And so I went over the hill, down into the valley to this lodge-like structure. And when I opened the door, I saw it had no walls or ceilings, but it was filled with people, and they were all looking at me expectantly. But when they saw me looking at them expectantly, they all sighed and turned away. So I went up to one of these people, and I said, "Can you tell me where we are?" And he said, "That's what we'd all like to know." And I went from one person to another in this great place until I had seen them all, and that's all they had to say. And then someone showed me a door. And I was walking down an endless hall filled with light. The floors and the walls and ceilings were made up of light. Little tiny mosaics of light that changed colors and hues and moved like moving pictures. And as I moved down this endless hall filled with light and moving pictures, I viewed all of the cultures of time, space, and energy. And then I noticed there was one light out. I didn't know where it was, but it was out. And as I attempted to conjure up a bulb to replace it with, I noticed there was no bulb there. And if there had been a bulb there, there was no receptacle to put it in. And if there had been a receptacle to put it in, there was nothing to hang it on. And as I looked into this place of no light, or that which appeared to be darkness, the whole hall followed me. And we moved in that which appeared to be darkness until one of us remembered to glow. And then more of us remembered to glow. And then we were walking down this endless hall filled with light. The floors and the walls and the ceilings were made up of light. Little tiny mosaics of light that changed colors and hues and moved like moving pictures. And as we walked down this endless hall of light and moving pictures, we viewed all of the cultures of time, space, and energy. And then we noticed there was one light out. And as we attempted to conjure up a bulb to replace it with, we noticed there was no bulb there. And if there had been a bulb there, there was no receptacle to put it in. And if there had been a receptacle to put it in, there was nothing to hang it on. And as we looked into this place of no light, or that which appeared to be darkness, the whole hall followed us. And then we discovered that as we began to glow, we became the hall of light through which is moving a cosmic awareness.
No hand to hold on to, and no lips to guide me. What a hot world place in the light of an angry sun. Ain't it hard to get on if you ain't got that someone? Hey, and it seems that without you. I see the heavy moonlight syrup dripping down my window, flowing like a river through the tears that I have cried. I gotta find myself, hey, a reason to go on living, but you can't be life into something that's already died. And it seems that my
days are numbered. Down to visit you.
People, I know that
my days are numbered.
'Cause I can't get it back together without you. All right.
That's where I got it. It was Lewis who put me onto all this study of the environment as a teaching machine.
To use our more recent terminology, Lewis was the person who showed me that the man-made environment was a teaching machine, a programmed teaching machine. But earlier, you see, the symbolists had discovered that the work of art is a programmed teaching machine. It's a mechanism for shaping sensibility. Well, Lewis simply extended this private art activity to the corporate activity of the whole society in making environments that basically were artifacts or works of art, and that acted as teaching machines upon the whole population.
In a time like this, where the written word and the spoken word, through commercial media, reaches millions of people with tremendous force, with the prestige of huge agencies of expression behind them, it seems above all important that intense training in language is demanded if the society is to retain its health.
We don't understand information movement and image making as warfare at all. We call this advertising. Actually, Madison Avenue is a major military operation, vastly aggressive, and out to conquer empires, territories within the human heart, the human senses. It is a huge military operation of empire building and icon making. If we had the slightest consciousness of social responsibility, instead of just a sort of a private subconscious, totally inadequate to our technology, we would teach our children in our schools how to protect themselves against media fallout and advertising fallout. It's simply fantastic, the unconsciousness of our Western world with regard to the forces that we release upon it. And the little areas in which we permit ourselves any consciousness or responsibility are minute compared to the real areas of impact. Advertising is a vast military operation intended to, openly and brashly intended to conquer the human spirit. The critics of advertising miss the bus entirely by complaining about false claims. Nothing could be more or less important than the false claims in advertising. It is the total icon-making activity that matters. And in the degree that these men are icon makers, they certainly, these agency men, they certainly have the right to call themselves creative artists. Whether they perform a good, benign social function is open to question, but as creators of tremendous effects, they are artists. Remember, an artist is primarily concerned with getting your attention, whether he's a poet or a musician. His first wish and hope is to trap your attention. This is the first hope and wish of every advertiser. He is an artist, certainly, to that extent. He wants to shape your attention, to shape your sensibilities, to create an effect upon you. Whether you believe a word he says, it couldn't matter less to him. He is interested only in effects, and not in changing your opinions or thoughts about anything. And this is also true of a poet. Couldn't care less what you thought or felt about him or anything, as long as he gets his effect across.
Now, in modern advertising, there's much the same revolution going forward as has been going forward in, painting and poetry and in the world of entertainment, with the audience moving more and more into the act. Modern advertising is more and more a substitute for the product. Because of its rich resources and means of sensuous solicitation, modern advertising can give you the effect of almost anything without your having to bother about having a thing at all.